Morning, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely. I'm James Semple. I'm here for Homeland Insurance of New York. I will be presenting the argument today on behalf of Homeland, but with me is Michael Rosen, Boundless Firm in Chicago, who has been admitted pro hac vice. And Ms. Keener will introduce the lawyer who will be making the argument on behalf of Executive Risk.
Welcome. Welcome to the court. Sure.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Carmela Keener of Rosenthal, Monheit & Gaddis on behalf of Executive Risk Specialty Insurance Company. Please introduce to the court my co-counsel, Daniel Layden and Ronald Schiller, both of Hangley, Aronchick, Pudlin, Siegel, and Schiller. And Mr. Schiller will make the presentation today on behalf of Executive Risk.
Welcome to the court, counsel.
Good afternoon, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, and Justice Ridgely. John Seaman again, this time on behalf of Corvell Corporation. I'm here still with my colleagues from Louisiana, Mr. Tom Philo and Ms. Summer Brown. Mr. Philo and I will share the argument together. I'm going to make the comedy presentation and Mr. Philo will address the statutory.
Welcome again to the court. Before you proceed, after the last oral argument, the members of the court have conferred to discuss this case. It was clear that the possibility, well, the appellate court opinion, the most recent appellate court opinion in Louisiana, may have a central role. I underscored the word may, and we also understand that that opinion may be the subject of further appellate review depending on what the Louisiana Supreme Court does or doesn't do. We understand that unlike the parties in the prior case, the parties to this case are parties to the Louisiana decision that was the subject of the last oral argument and that would be a subject of this oral argument, and indeed would be bound by whatever the results are in the Louisiana courts. That is, whether the appellate court opinion becomes final or whether there is further appellate review. So there are two points to all of this preface. The first is since the parties to this case are bound by whatever the Louisiana courts may ultimately decide, we would like counsel to focus on why we should not await the decision of the Louisiana courts, whatever it might be. That's point one. This is not addressed just to you, though. Secondly, to the extent, if counsel wish to proceed and make their oral arguments, since we have already gotten a fairly extensive dress rehearsal of those arguments in the prior presentations, the court would appreciate it if there be either minimal or no repetition, and that counsel focus on the aspects of this case that are unique that have not already been the subject of oral argument. So those are the two matters that we want to address.
Thank you for that guidance, Justice Jacobs. I'll address your first question, why this court should not wait until a subsequent decision issues out of Louisiana. There are at least four reasons. First, we don't know how long that process could take. The application for the writ, argument, briefing, we have no idea how long that could take. But for more than that, there could also be remands in Louisiana. I think my colleagues pointed out there are other issues that are also being addressed in the Louisiana appeal related to notice issues. We're not going to get into that here, but those could be possible issues.
Yeah, but
that
the issue, that's central to this case is one of the issues that would be decided by the
only one, though. Yes. The fact that there are others make it more complicated. Yes, there are multiple issues on appeal. Unless or until Williams 2 is overturned, it's the law of Louisiana. That's what the Siegel case is that we cited. That's what Playtex says. We cited that. That was a Vice Chancellor Chandler decision. And regardless of how this court rules, the Louisiana Supreme Court will still have the final word regarding the construction and application of its own Louisiana statute. And this court need not and should not await a further ruling in Louisiana. As a matter of comedy, it should let that question, put that question in the hands of the Louisiana courts. Just want to make one more comedy point and then turn it over to Mr. Filo. My colleagues say that the insurance companies argue that the Williams Court demonstrated a lack of comedy to Delaware with respect to the June 13th opinion. We don't think that's the case. We think comedy also requires a state, not only requires a state to give respect to its sister states, but it does not require a state to abdicate its own role as the appropriate and final arbiter of novel issues of its own law. Clearly, the Williams Court determined not to give binding effect to the Delaware judgment, but there's nothing wrong with that. That was the prerogative of the Williams Court, and Delaware courts would do the same thing, and we've done it. In Maldonado versus Flynn, the Court of Chancery declined to follow a decision from the Southern District of New York because it concluded that court made an incorrect application of important issues of Delaware law regarding, in that case, settlement and dismissal of derivative suits. So if a court believes another court...
Well, we're not talking about an issue of Delaware corporate jurisprudence here, you know, which is defined by the Delaware statute and the Delaware common law. We're talking about an insurance policy arising in circumstances, all of which are centered in Louisiana, and a statute and the judicial construction of a Louisiana statute.
Yes, we are, Your Honor, and my point was only that comedy goes both ways. It doesn't mean that this court should adhere to a lower court decision interpreting another state's law simply because that was decision was first in time. Comedy, you submit, means more than that. Respect for judgments from other sister states also includes reversing decisions when necessary if inconsistent with the decision from a sister state. On that, I'll pass the baton to my colleague, Mr. Filo.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. I'm Tom Filo from Louisiana. My firm was involved in all of these cases, in the Bescom case that was cited, in the Gunderson case, in the Williams case. My firm was involved in all of them, and we've had insurance issues in all of them. Since y'all are interested in looking at the issue of whether you should wait and see what happens further in the Williams case, there's really a few reasons why you probably don't want to do that. Number one is that there is an issue in that case. And if you look at the opinion, it talks about notice from the insured to the insurer. There's a unique statute in Louisiana where you can sue the insurer. And the direct action statute has an issue with whether or not the insured has to give notice.
Well, let me interrupt you.
That's in the case.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. The parties to this case, including your clients,
yes, sir,
are parties to the Louisiana case.
That's correct.
They are going to be bound by whatever the Louisiana court decides.
That is correct.
Regardless of what we say. So can you give us a reason or reasons why we should be going forward at all?
In this case?
Yes.
Well, if you were to await the ruling of the Supreme Court, you might be waiting a very long time. And the reason is that there is an issue in the case.
We may not be either.
That the Louisiana Supreme, and you may not be. Louisiana Supreme
we understand
Court,
that Louisiana Supreme Court grants cert in perhaps 1% of the cases.
That is correct.
Not a great
unlikely that cert is granted in any case.
Right. So aren't we, we're just balancing the probabilities, really talking about what action will be taken on the motion for re-argument.
That's true. However, because of this other issue that the Louisiana Supreme Court has taken in the Gorman case, which was in the opinion, if the court were to reverse Gorman, then our case in Louisiana goes back to the trial court, and we would have to start over on summary judgment and do some discovery on the notice issue, which we didn't have to present. So there's an issue with whether or not we're going to end up getting remanded there or not, depending on what the Supreme Court does in the Gorman decision. It has nothing to do with the issues here, but it does have to do with the summary judgment we got in Louisiana. So you could be waiting a long time, is my point. And in both of these cases.
Well, even if that happens, would not the Louisiana court still address the issue under this statute, which we are looking at here?
Would the Louisiana Supreme Court?
Yes.
No, sir. If that were to happen, this case would get remanded because it was our summary judgment. There was no cross motion for summary judgment.
In that case, we would not
put on some proof we needed to, and we'd have to go back and start over and do some discovery.
Except that with respect to the issue that's before us, the Supreme Court of Louisiana doesn't speak to that, then the ruling of the Intermediate Court of Appeals is final.
That's correct. That would be the end of the road. So we're talking about a period of time.
So it doesn't matter whether the case is remanded or not, because the critical issue will have been finalized.
Right, and that is correct, Judge, because the Gorman case doesn't have in it the issue we have today. But at any rate, the one thing is both of these cases, if there is a reversal, would go back to the trial court. There's other issues to decide. This is not the end of the road. So that one way to handle it, I suppose, could be that if it gets sent back to the trial court, then the trial court would have the benefit of whatever happens down the road, and could apply, if the Louisiana Supreme Court were to reverse, they could apply that in a subsequent motion and can deal with it. And I think a remand actually is the best way to wait, because we can all go forward.
As I understand your position, you're making one argument, and that is that it may take a long time to get an answer from, at least a final answer from the Louisiana courts. And I think the response to that is it may or it may not.
It may or may not.
All right. Is there any other reason?
The other reason would be that while we await however long it's going to be, this case is going to go forward, if there were a reversal, back in the trial court. The trial court could apply whatever is done in Louisiana Supreme Court. Rather than just wait and see what happens here, the parties could go back under the law in Louisiana as it stands right now with the Williams decision. And then if Louisiana...
So what would we be instructing the Superior Court to do? We reverse and remand, but by the way, Superior Court, if the Louisiana law turns out to be different, then you'll have to start all over again?
Justice, I really do not know whether that's even allowed in Delaware, to be quite frank. I'm a Louisiana-trained lawyer, and I will tell you that it is quite different. Common law and civil law is completely different.
I understand that, but appellate courts, even in Louisiana, sometimes have to give instructions to a lower court. I don't know that their language is, that's done in French. It's done in plain English, like most courts, and that's what I'm trying to think through here.
Certainly up to the court if they want to wait or they want to make a decision on this matter. But Justice Jacobs, you mentioned that in order to remand this matter and reverse, you had to find error. And so what I'd like to do, I think if you look at the Louisiana Third Circuit opinion in Williams, and you compare it to the opinion in this case below, I think it's pretty obvious where the errors occurred. Judge Herlihy tried to broadly interpret an exclusion. Now, under Louisiana law and Delaware law, you can't do that in an insurance policy. You're supposed to broadly construe the insuring agreement and narrowly construe the exclusions. As Your Honor said, if they wanted to make the penalty exclusion broad, they could have defined it broadly. They didn't define it at all. So they're stuck with a narrow interpretation of it. The court went at great lengths to talk about how the Louisiana statute was penal in nature and cited to the Bescom case. And I'll tell you, if you look at...
Well, on the issue, which is common to this case and the case that was previously argued, are the arguments... Is there anything different, new and different, that we haven't heard already?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think Judge Herlihy, not having any benefit of the Williams case, looked to Louisiana to see what was there, and all he saw was the Bescom case. But the Bescom case, if you look at it, the Bescom case had an insurance contract that was completely different. That insurance contract only covered compensatory sums. So Judge Zaney, in that case, from the get-go, had to look and see, was this what you're asking for in this lawsuit, was it compensatory in nature, or was it penal in nature? Not to get to an exclusion, but to see if it was insured at all under the insuring language. So by applying the Bescom case, which had an insurance contract that only covered compensatory sums, the court, of course, had to get to, is it penal in nature or not? Here, this insurance contract covers any monetary amount. So if you ask the question, is it penal in nature, it doesn't answer the question. This insurance contract specifically covers things that are, you know, penal in nature, and specifically excludes things that are penal in nature. So it was wrong to rely on the Bescom case, primarily because the insurance contract in that case was so different. So we think the analysis done by Judge Zaney was correct. But if you look at the at the opinion below, the court continuously does this. It talks about how the damages are not actual losses. This policy covers actual losses and non-actual losses. It covers any monetary amount. So to go into and analyze this contract as if it only covers compensatory sums is to convert this broad insuring contract that covers punitives and exemplaries and any monetary amount into the type of contract in the Bescom case, which is only for compensatory sums. So the penal in nature argument doesn't get you anywhere here. And if you were to follow that line with, okay,
I think your colleague made that same point.
Okay. And it gets you back to the issue of whether or not it's exemplary damage or whatever. The other thing is, and I thought this was kind of interesting, in one of the policies below, in the Homeland policy, they actually cover attorney's fees and exclude penalties. Now, Judge Hurley found that the attorney's fees that were being claimed under the statute were penalties. I can't see how it's possible for it to be both when the Homeland policy says attorney's fees are covered and penalties are excluded on the same page. They can't be the same thing. The court found that the attorney's fees were also penalties.
You're into your rebuttal time. You can use it.
I would like to reserve the 5 minutes.
I'd like to just ask you a procedural question, Louisiana. The motion for re-argument, does that go before the panel of the three judges?
Yes, Your Honor, same three.
Is there a procedure for rehearing en banc?
There's only a procedure. There's a procedure for rehearing en banc, and there are 12, and that is if the panel were to deny the rehearing and if there were a decision of the court that were contrary to the, and there's no other, as far as I know, there's no other cases in the Third Circuit that would be on point, but it's only when there's a disagreement amongst the panels.
Okay.
And this goes back to the same panel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Ron Schiller, and I represent Executive Risk Specialty. And to be clear, first off, we've divided our time with me taking 15 minutes, and I'm sensitive to what you said about not repeating what you've already heard, even though we weren't in the prior case. And Mr. Semple will take the last 5 minutes. And the way we divided our time, but subject to Your Honor's questioning, is I'm going to cover the penalties issue, and Mr. Semple is going to cover the jurisdictional comedy, full faith and credit issue, and related issues. First off, Your Honor, I'm going to step back for a second. And we used to be in the underlying case. We filed the underlying, the first case Your Honor's heard about. We're not in it any longer. But similar policy issues as Your Honor's have focused on. So I'm going to both go into some issues that were raised this morning right before the break and also tell Your Honor's some areas that I'd like Your Honor's to let me walk you through in a slightly different way on the penalties issue. And some of these go directly to Justice Jacobs' questions to the insurer lawyer this morning. First off, Justice Jacobs asked whether or not we agree that the choice of law inquiry also takes into account Louisiana law, and in some cases Louisiana law may control. No, we don't agree. Delaware choice of law principles, which apply here and which the class plaintiffs and Corvell, and understand the class plaintiffs are here with an assignment from Corvell, and they have the same counsel as the panel saw from this morning as well. The choice of law is Delaware choice of law, and we all agree. Delaware choice of law, and this really isn't in dispute, under Restatement Sections 193 and 188, directs all of us to make a determination about whether or not there's a difference between the laws in this case of Delaware and California. And the reason I say Delaware and California is that Corvell has its principal place of business in California. It's incorporated, and it chose to be incorporated, in Delaware. Corvell operates in 50 states. It handles workers' comp claims on behalf of workers' compensation insurers. So whether you look at the Delaware principles under Section 188 of the Restatement, or whether you look at other cases in Delaware that construe those principles, or, and I commend to the court, even though it's not controlling, the Specialty Surfaces or Sprinterf Third Circuit case, which dealt with a policyholder that operated in construction companies in 50 states, but in that case had its principal place of business and was incorporated in Pennsylvania. There are sound reasons under Delaware law why the law that matters here is not Louisiana law, it's California law, and it's Delaware law. And the only relevance as we stand here or sit here today, Justices, is whether or not, is that you have to look at the Louisiana statute, which could have been a contract provision, which could have been an Arkansas statute, which could have been a California statute, and decide whether or not it fits the unambiguous and clear definition of penalty. And the courts in Delaware and California define penalty. And that's common. You know, the policy doesn't have to define
so
it.
I think this is the same point that
that the Council for Chartists made?
Yeah, Council for Chartists made in the prior argument. Is there something new and different?
Yeah, and what's new, Your Honor, is that we disagree, and maybe it's flavor, maybe it's spin, but I think it's substantive, Justice. We disagree that what a judge at St. Landry Parish, with the absence of any discovery and deciding to disregard Judge Hurley's decision, which was issued before he issued a decision. We disagree that a decision construing a statute, which has been justified here as having more weight because it's a civil system, not a common law system, we disagree that should take precedence over the application of Delaware and California law. And Judge Hurley, he found that there was no conflict between them. To the issues in this case, and that's a substantial disagreement with the plaintiffs, and maybe it's an emphasis, Justice Jacobs. But it also means that we don't agree that even if the St. Landry's Parish judge, in the absence of any discovery, believed His Honor had the right to disregard Judge Hurley's decision, or to disregard the analysis of the Seal decision, which is a Supreme Court of a Louisiana case that says that you don't look at labels. And remember that a central argument.
Well, if we were to accept what you just argued, would that get us involved in a duel between these two opinions?
Possibly. That's exactly right. But if you don't accept it, Justice Jacobs, what you're really saying is if the underlying dispute is in Louisiana or is in Florida, or is in Arkansas or Mississippi, or the southern part of Illinois, and a state judge in those locations decides to interpret a contract provision, which he says is a typical, in the case of Louisiana, civil justice thing to do, or it's a term that he's familiar or she's familiar with in Arkansas, you are abdicating the central role of Delaware courts applying Delaware, if that's what applies, because there's no conflict between Delaware and California law, to construction, not by, and this addresses also the justice's questions about reasonable expectations of the insureds, not according to the reasonable expectation of Corvell, because Corvell, after all, was the party that we entered into an insurance contract with, and Corvell is in California. And we cited to the panel and to Judge Hurley and argued to Judge Hurley after discovery on this issue, full discovery on this issue, discovery we never had in Louisiana. We argued to Judge Hurley that to the extent they're relevant, reasonable expectations of insured, and there have been no affidavits or extrinsic evidence to go to reasonable expectations of the insured, but to the extent they're relevant, you can look at the law of California or Delaware, which is where the insured is. And the law is very clear. What the law says is that you apply the definition of penalties to the underlying facts. Now, here it happens to be a statute. And that somehow is why we get backed into, we should give special attention to the St. Landry's Parish judge's decision, or now the Third Circuit Court of Appeals decision. But the reality is that
Judge Hurley looked to the Louisiana statute.
Yes, he did.
That was not error for him to do that, was it?
I don't think he had to do it. But the reason he did it, at least the reason that I believe he did it when you read his opinion, is that Corvell had argued that the statute supported their reading because it didn't use the word penalty, it used the word damages. So he took on their argument. And what he discovered is it was, in terms of legislative history, directly borrowed from another statute that did the exact same thing. It's just for reasons that are completely unclear in the record, and he said contradicted by the legislative history, they substituted the word damages for penalty. And he said that. And he also looked at the other law, because one of the other things that the justices should know is that when they mention the Bescom case or the other cases, these cases either use the word, and cases we cited in our brief, penalties with respect to this very statute. In other words, other judges use the word penalties to describe this statute at issue, which is consistent with what Judge Hurley was looking at. He was saying even these Louisiana courts who have addressed this statute, which is only in Louisiana,
has their trial courts.
Trial court and appeals courts. And one of them, and the Bescom case was a federal court, and a federal court sitting in Louisiana that obviously is familiar with the civil law and construing civil law statutes. It's a Louisiana federal judge. And other courts. And what these courts have concluded or have said in discussing the statute at all, they've said this is a penalty. And in fact, you were counted five judges who have now supposedly agreed with the underlying plaintiffs in Louisiana state courts, because the federal courts have not. And the five state judges are the state judge, Judge Wyatt, in the Columbia Casualty case, where the issue was never taken up on appeal. And this was this, and again, by the way, this was not, there was no discovery, and we believe that if nothing else, and this has to do with the First Health case, not my case, but if nothing else, we think it sort of proves the point that this is a penalty. Judge Wyatt decided on summary adjudication and without discovery that because the plaintiffs came in before there was discovery and said, here are the number of doctors who have been shortchanged, here are the number of times they have been shortchanged, multiply that times $2,000, and voila, $262 million partial summary judgment. And then, I think it was the same day, he ruled against Columbia Casualty on whether this was a penalty or not. Columbia Casualty did not appeal it. It settled. So my point, Your Honors, is that Judge Wyatt concluded that it was a penalty, our judge here in St. Landry's Parish, without discussing the full faith and credit issue at all. The Delaware court clearly had jurisdiction. They didn't appeal that issue. They tried to stop Judge Herlihy. He ruled against them, and he reached the decision after discovery. They didn't appeal it. He decided to ignore it. He didn't touch the comedy issue. He didn't touch full faith and credit. He didn't discuss the Seal decision, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and they justify this in terms of, this is civil law, you don't have to do a real analysis. After discussing all of the objections of the insurers, my client, insurer Senior, ultimately disposed of the whole case. The opinion is like 10 pages of discussion of everything we say, including our full faith and credit argument, and then in one paragraph, or maybe it was two paragraphs, said, nope, I find it's a penalty. It's not a penalty. And again, disregarding what other judges have said about what the statute is. My point, Your Honor, is choice of law is critical here, and choice of law never directs you to Louisiana. And the definition of penalty is critical here. And the only thing that comes back at us in their reply brief to try to dissuade the justices from the definition of penalties is the Corvell and through the class plaintiffs through assignment basically say, with respect to penalties, we looked at the wrong definition, and then they say we should have looked at a 1999 definition. Our policy was issued in 2004. Homelands was issued in 2005-6. And in any event, we don't know where they got their definition from, and we suggest to the justices that you look at the Black's Law Dictionary definitions we provided. Look at the Delaware court decisions we provided. Look at the California court decisions. And indeed, look at how Louisiana courts have described this statute. If comedy is going to come into play, Judge Herlihy did precisely what the Delaware Superior Court judges are supposed to do. Everybody had a full and fair opportunity. Everybody made their arguments. We argued what law was to apply. It was 6 weeks after he ruled that that the St. Landry's Parish judge disregarded what he had ruled. And the other thing, by the way, is it won't
did
be
disregard or declare it erroneous?
Mentioned it and didn't discuss it. Didn't discuss his reasoning. Didn't take it on, didn't say he was wrong. Again, contract dispute between us and Corvell. And Corvell is the policyholder. Happens that the underlying plaintiffs, through a direct action statute, which is one of the issues on appeal and one of the issues that may be affected by Gorman, on a direct action, said essentially, we have a say in this too. But the reality is no Delaware law and no California law says that this should be determined based on the construction of a state court judge wherever the injury occurred. And this is not a tort case, of course. It's a contract case. And Judge Herlihy soundly rejected as meritless their argument that it's a tort case and tort principles should apply. 1 second, please.
I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Semple unless you have any questions for me.
Good afternoon. I'm here for Homeland Insurance. I should note, first of all, that Homeland does not have a judgment against it in Louisiana. The judgment that was entered there was only against Executive Risk because the motion was against Executive Risk. So we are not subject to the judgment that's been entered in Louisiana. Although we agree with Executive Risk that in terms of full faith and credit and deference, the Louisiana trial court and the Louisiana Court of Appeals should have deferred to the Delaware courts. First of all, they should have put themselves in a position of the Delaware court. That's what our courts instruct. That's what the constitutional law says. The second court should apply the law that the first court would. And if there's even any doubt about the finality of the decision, the first decision, there should be deference to that until. And they should the second court should defer decision on the motions before it until the other decision is finalized.
So does that make this court first, second, or third?
This court is first. This case was filed first in terms of coverage. The decision of Judge Hurley came first. The decision in First Health came first on May 7th. And then at the end of May, the class filed its application for summary judgment against Executive Risk. That was presented on June 24th, and a decision was entered on June 28th after Judge Hurley's decision had been made. And the Court of Appeals decision that is being trumpeted about, and which is not final by under Louisiana law, so that needs no deference, that decision came in the face of this appeal.
When will that decision be final?
I have no idea. I'm here. This is a Delaware case about Delaware insurance law, and I'm a Delaware lawyer. I think I know the Delaware law on that fairly well. And Judge Hurley did everything right. Did choice of law. He found that this case wasn't centered in Louisiana. In fact, followed the Delaware law that says when the case is centered in the domicile or the headquarters someplace else, you apply that law. And they didn't conflict. And they applied plain meaning of the word penalty. Penalty, the word penalty has been used in countless Delaware statutes and opinions. No one's ever seen the need to define it. Why? It's got a plain meaning. And he applied the plain meaning by looking at the Louisiana statute. I also want to talk a little bit about why this court really doesn't, I don't think, have subject matter jurisdiction over this appeal. Because when the notice of appeal was first filed, it contained an appeal from various orders. A November 11, 2011 order, which denied Corvell's motion to stay or dismiss this action. It then appealed from the June 13 order, and then the subsequent orders entered by Judge Rocconelli. And we filed a motion to dismiss. The court said, we're going to deny it without prejudice, and you can brief it later and argue it as to what's the scope of the appeal. The scope of the appeal now has narrowed, because when they filed their opening brief, the appellants didn't mention any of the orders except the June 13th order. So the only focus before this court at this time is the June 13th order. And it was clearly not filed in a timely fashion. It was filed almost 70 days after it was entered. It was a final judgment. It was a final judgment because it resolved all of the claims that were made in the lawsuit. The only people who made claims in the lawsuit were Homeland and Executive Risk. Corvell did not file any claims. They didn't file cross claims for coverage. They didn't file any claims at all. So all the claims that were in the lawsuit were decided by the June 13th order and opinion. As a result, that was a final judgment. It should have been appealed within 30 days. It wasn't. It clearly wasn't. And I don't believe this court has subject matter jurisdiction to hear this appeal. The June 13th order was final and should be declared so. Any questions? I'll be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Very briefly on rebuttal in response to Mr. Semple's last point. The June 13th opinion did not clearly declare that it was the final decision in the action. It didn't declare anywhere that the case was or should be dismissed. It didn't declare anywhere that it was the court's final act. All it did was grant partial summary judgment motions that were before it. All you have to do is look at the complaints and the motions. Homeland filed a 5-count complaint, sought summary judgment only as to counts 1, 2, and 4. Executive Risk filed the 5-count complaint and sought only summary judgment as to, quote, the issues of penalty, restitution, and contract. That only dealt with count 3 of the complaint. Homeland and Executive Risk did not seek summary judgment even as to any of Corvell's affirmative defenses. Therefore, when Judge Hurley retired, Judge Rocconelli came on to the matter and resumed responsibility. She properly asked the question, what remains to be tried in this case? It was only after the parties addressed that with her that the court determined there were no issues to be tried, and that's when she closed the case on the docket on August 28th in connection with that order.
The court, again, appreciates the arguments of counsel. Obviously, we have a lot to think about, and we will do that and give it all of the thought that the complexity of this case deserves. Thank you very much. The court stands in recess.
give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honorable court.